I've heard it said that love is patient and kind, that it isn't arrogant and that it doesn't seek itself. I've heard all these things about what love is and what it is not. But what does love actually look like? Love is not stagnant. It cannot stand still. It is equal parts heart and motion. Love moves. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. Love seizes the opportunity. Love does.
Well, hey, let me welcome you on all of our campuses to CCV as we are right in the middle of a series called Love Does. And we're in week 4 of the series, and today I want to talk to you about a fourth thing that love does. And to kind of get us all headed in the same direction, I want to ask you this question. What is the last thing that you lost that really bothered you? Maybe it was some keys, maybe some money, maybe a wallet. For me, I actually don't like to lose anything. And I mean like anything, and here's why. Because where is it? I mean, here it was, now it's not. And I don't have time for that. And it seems like sometimes you go to people for help and they can just say the most, well, not useful things at all. Like, for example, when I was young, I used to go to my mom when I would lose something. I'd say, Mom, I lost this. I need your help. And she would say something like this all the time. She'd say, well, Ashley, it has to be somewhere. You're right, Mom. It does have to be somewhere. And then she'd say, well, where's the last place you had it? If I knew that, it wouldn't be lost, Mom, okay? I think maybe, because I don't like losing things, maybe when we get to heaven, maybe one of the things God does for us is he gives us back everything we ever lost in life. All right, I can just picture myself up there. He's like, step right up. Here's your 7 wallets and 53 sunglasses. And here's 5,894 ballpoint pens. There you go, right there. And you know, I was thinking about all the things I lost this last week and just going through a list and how it affected me in different ways. And this fact hit me, okay, this fact hit me, that how consumed we get with something that's lost is directly correlated to our love for it. Isn't that true? I mean, how amped you get trying to find whatever's lost is really equal to how much you love it. I mean, let me give you some examples. You can follow along. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to rate on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being, if I lost this item, I probably wouldn't even look for it. 10 being, I wouldn't even go to work and the world would stop to find it, okay? Where would you rate on this scale? How about a $5 bill? Where would you be at? I'm about a 2. You know, when I was 16, I might have been like a 6 because that's a nice value meal at Taco Bell. But I'm about a 2 right now. What about for you, your car keys? Car keys, I'm about a 6 probably. Here's what's kind of funny about losing your car keys, though. Isn't it amazing how many times you check your pockets? Like, you're like, I know I just had them. No? I'm going to go one more time. Still not there. They're not there. What about this one? Your cell phone. A little more for me. Okay, I'm about a 7.5, I would say there. What about this next item? Hey, mother. Do not answer that question. And for the record, I have an amazing mother-in-law. What about this last item? Child. Any of you parents ever lost a young child? A little while ago, actually last summer, we lost our middle daughter, Kennedy, on the beach in San Diego for about 15 minutes. And I'm telling you, the world stopped. And I was like a crazy man running all over the place trying to find her. I wonder what would have topped Jesus' list of what consumed him. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. Because I think the more we can see what consumed Jesus, the more we should get a clue into what should consume us. And I want to open scripture today, and I want to just show you a place where Jesus talked about the number one thing that consumed him more than anything else. He said it was his mission. He also said it was something lost, which I think reveals to us why he was so consumed about it. And the way I want to do that is I want to tell you a story. It's a story that if you've been around church for any amount of time, you've heard this story probably dozens, if not hundreds of times. But I want to retell it in a different way because I heard this story told about 10 years ago, and the way I heard it, it really changed my life. And so I just want you to hear it in a fresh way today. And the story goes something like this. There was a sheep rancher who was really wealthy, and he lived on the west side of Jerusalem. And he had 2 kids, actually he had 2 boys. And the older son was really responsible, really diligent, but the younger son, well, he was a strong-willed and defiant one. And as the story goes, one day, out of the blue, the younger son comes to his father and says, "Dad, I'm tired of being a sheep rancher. As a matter of fact, Dad, your way of doing things, it's kind of cramping my style. And I really want to go out and find life on my own. So, Dad, here's what I want to propose. I want you to give me my share of the inheritance now while you're still alive." Which, by the way, would have been a massive insult in that culture. He would have basically been saying, "Dad, I wish you were dead." And to everybody's surprise, reluctantly, but this loving father granted his younger son's request. And it says within 2 days, the younger son packed up everything he had, got on a camel, and he was out of there. I think he went out the front gates without even waving goodbye. He was gone. And it says he went a long ways away, and he went to a big city. And you know, big cities offer all the kind of economic opportunities that large cities would. But this young son, he never took a Dave Ramsey financial class. He skipped out on rock solid at CCV, which is a mistake. And so he just starts spending money on things. As a matter of fact, he starts spending money on experiences, some of those experiences with women that work late at night on the streets, experiences that Dad had always warned him against. And what happened next, he could have never imagined with the amount of money he had from Dad. All of a sudden, it was gone. He was out of money, and it says a famine hit that land, and he was out of money, and there was no food, and it says he began to actually starve. And the only job he could find was the lowest on the ladder in that society. He had to work in the swine industry. And it says when he was working in a hog pen one day, he started to drool over the slop he was feeding the pigs. That's how hungry he was. And it was on that day he had one of the most defining days of his life in a hog pen, because he realized, my worst day with Dad is far better than my best day without him. And he made a decision that day, I'm gonna try to go back. And so he came up with a speech to tell his dad, because he just wasn't sure if he'd ever receive him back. And the speech went something like this: "Dad, I know I've messed up this time bad, but Dad, would you just take me back as just one of your servants? That's all I want." And so he took the long journey home. And I think he rehearsed the speech over and over again on the way home. And he started getting closer to home. He starts to see some familiar sights, and his heart starts beating a little bit faster. His hands start getting sweaty because he's just not sure Dad will ever take him back. And I think he rounds that last hill and looks down at his dad's house. And this is the moment of truth. But it just so happens that while he's a long ways off, his dad was actually sitting on the porch. Because every day, his dad, at the end of his day, would sit on the porch and look in the direction that his son had left, just waiting, would he ever come back? And it says his dad saw him in the distance, just a skeleton-type figure up against a hill. And I think his fatherly intuition kicked in, and he starts off sprinting. He hurdles the front gate in his tunic and just takes off. And I think some tears start going down his face because he realizes he gets closer. I think this might actually be my son. And he comes upon his son, and all of a sudden his son just starts to fumble out the words he's been practicing. "Dad, I know I've sinned against you and it's heaven," but his dad doesn't even listen, doesn't even let him finish. He wraps his son in the just biggest embrace. He won't even let go. And then he calls his servants over and he says, "Get a robe for my son and put a ring on his finger and shoes on his feet," all symbolizing that he's now reinstated as a son in the family. And then he looks at his servants and he says this: "We're gonna throw the biggest party this side of Jerusalem's ever seen. As a matter of fact, we're gonna kill the fattened calf," which, by the way, would have fed the whole village. And so the party begins. And if this was a two-part series, part one would start winding down right now. And part one ends in this fashion. The older brother's been working in the field. He doesn't see any of this. And it says he comes in, and he sees the whole village partying at his house. And he asks one of his dad's servants, "What on earth is going on here?" And they whisper in his ear, "You're not gonna believe it. You're younger brother came back home, and Dad actually is cooking the fillets right now, and this party is starting to get a little bit crazy." And as part one winds, the last scene you see before it goes to black is a look of disgust on the older brother's face. Well, you press play on part two, and part two picks up, and the loving father's walking through this party, and he realizes someone's missing. And he walks up to one of the waiters and goes, "Hey, have you seen older anywhere?" "Well, yeah, he's out on the back porch. He's refusing to come in." So he goes out on the back porch and he locks eyes with his older son, and his son just verbally unleashes on his dad. "Dad, how could you? You know he wasted all of our inheritance and most of it on drugs and prostitutes. And Dad, you cooked the fillets? The fillets, Dad? You wouldn't even cook my friends and I strip steak." And his dad's just pleading with his son as it winds down. And we're actually left a little bit open-ended because the last scene that you see is just a dad pleading for his son to join the party. And he says these words, "Son, you don't understand your younger brother. He was dead, now he's alive. He was lost, and now he's found." Well, that parable that you just heard comes from Luke 15. It was a parable Jesus told, and it's oftentimes referred to as the parable of the lost son or the prodigal son. It's only 504 words, but most scholars would agree that it's the greatest story ever told. And I want to unpack it for us today and just apply it to our lives in a real significant way, because I think it's a really clear picture of what drove and consumed Jesus. But the problem with this story is this, is that you can't really understand the point of the story until you understand why Jesus had to tell this story in the first place. And to do that, you have to back all the way up to Luke chapter 15, the very first verse. Let me show you what's going on. Look at this, verse 1. It says, "By this time, a lot of men and women of doubtful reputation," in other words, in our context, this would be people that were not Christians at all, "were hanging around Jesus, listening intently." There was something about Jesus that he just attracted people that were far from God, and he invited them in to listen to his message. But look at the response Jesus got. It says this, "The Pharisees and religion scholars," in other words, the people that knew the most about the Bible at the time, "they were not pleased at all. They growled," or some translations say they muttered, "He takes in sinners and eats meals with them, treating them like old friends. Are you kidding me?" And then it goes on to say this in verse 3. Their grumbling triggered this story. You might say, what story? The story of the prodigal son? Actually, no. It triggered three stories, and the prodigal son story was the last of those three stories. I think it's so significant that Jesus decided he had to tell three stories to address this problem. Why would he do that? Well, maybe the only way I could relate would be something like this. For those of you that are parents, have your kids ever done something that was so just extreme, so repulsive, that you didn't just address it with them, you like laid into them, right? One of the most repulsive things that my daughter's ever done is she walked in one day and she said, "Dad, I want to be a Dallas Cowboys fan." I said, "What did you say? You get over here right now." You know, actually, one of the real repulsive things she did, though, she walked in one day from playing outside, and she was real young at the time, but she said, "Dad, I don't like dark-skinned people." And I just remember sitting down with her and just saying, "You don't understand, that's not who we are. That's not who we want you to be. That's not the Wooldridge family. That's not us." And I think something similar was happening here with Jesus, that he was so repulsed by the attitude of the religious elite at that time and that he would hang out with sinners. And so he launches into these three stories. And the first story was a story of a lost sheep. And so all the men in the audience would have got this. He said, let's say you had 100 sheep and one of them got loose. Wouldn't you leave the 99 behind and just go try to find that one? And they would all nod their heads because they'd all been on a sheep hunt before. And he said, if you found that one, you would like celebrate. You'd call everybody together and throw a party, wouldn't you? They're like, well, yeah. I'm thinking maybe it was like those llamas that got loosed a couple weeks ago in Sun City. Like, it's like, yeah, we would. And Jesus said, here's what you would say to yourself. You'd say this. You'd say, celebrate with me. I found my lost sheep. Well, count on it. There's more joy in heaven over one sinner's rescued life than over 99 good people in no need of rescue. And then Jesus goes on. He tells a second story. He says, hey, let's say there's a woman that had 10 coins and she lost one. Well, that may not be a big deal for us, but in that culture, when a woman got married, she was given coins by her father. And these weren't just any coins. These were really expensive. And these would have been like her social security, where if her husband ever died, this would have been what would have been able to carry her on. And so if she lost one, it'd be a huge deal. And so all the women are like nodding. I get that. And he goes, if you lost one, you'd search like crazy. If you found it, you'd throw a party. He said, yeah. Well, look at this. You'd say, celebrate with me. I found my lost coin. Well, count on it. That's the kind of party God's angels throw every time one lost soul turns to God. And then Jesus goes on and he tells the story of the prodigal son. But the prodigal son story is different. Here's why. Because all the characters in the story of the prodigal son were present when Jesus told it. Think about this. Who was the loving father in the story of the prodigal son? It was Jesus. Who was the older brother? It was the religious leaders. And who was the younger brother? It was those notorious sinners that Jesus was hanging out with. And he told it all right in their presence to make one single point to them. And if you want to know the thing that just drove and consumed Jesus more than anything else, here it is. This is what it was. Jesus' mission and what consumed him most was lost people. I love this summary of Jesus' life in Luke 19, verse 10. It says this, for the Son of Man, in other words, Jesus, came to find and restore the lost. Period. And remember, Jesus said that he was consumed, and we said earlier that how consumed we get with something that's lost reveals to us our love for it. And Jesus wanted to tell them, listen, I want you to make it clear that I love people that are far from God, and I'm for them. And right now, I just want to let you know, on all of our campuses right now, I know there's some of you sitting in the audience right now that you'd say, I'm not a follower of Jesus. I know I'm far from God. You may even feel a little lost in life. And the one thing you may need to hear today is that Jesus is for you. As a matter of fact, if he was here today, he wouldn't be spending time with me or the rest of us in the audience who are followers of Jesus. He would be consumed with you. Because he said, man, if there was 100 and one got lost, I'd leave the 99 behind and I'd go after that one. For the rest of us that are followers of Jesus, what's the message for us? I think the message for us is this. From that story, it's that there's two attitudes you can have towards people that are far from God. You can have two attitudes, and here they are. You can have the attitude of a loving father, or you can have the attitude of the older brother. What's the difference? The loving father was consumed with who was missing. He was consumed and preoccupied with that. The older brother is consumed with himself. And the message to the religious leaders at that time was that you care far too little for people that are far from God. And I think what happened to them, and maybe it happens to us at times too, is their logic got a little messed up. See, their logic was holiness to them was how far they could distance themselves from sinners. That was holiness to them. But Jesus didn't define holiness that way. Here's how Jesus defined holiness. If this was Jesus, Jesus defined holiness as how close we could get to him. And because Jesus was always hanging out and consumed with inviting in people that were far from him, listen carefully, and this will be hard for some of you that have been on church for a while. It is impossible to be a fully devoted follower of Jesus and not be driven and concerned by those that are far from God. It's impossible. Did you know there was only two people that got upset that the younger brother came back home? The older brother and the fattened calf. That's it. But rewind the story for a moment. Imagine that this younger brother's coming back home, just not sure. And instead of his loving father meeting him there, his older brother would have been the one that met him in the field. Do you think the story would have been any different? Of course it would have been. And I just want you to know that at CCV, we never want to have an older brother church. Ever. An older brother church is exclusive versus inclusive. An older brother church is one that's a country club environment that only exists for the people that call this place home. And we never want that to happen. I just want you to know the tendency of every church over time is to lean more and more towards an older brother attitude, not that of a loving father. And we have to fight that, and here's why. Because listen to this. If the message of Jesus is for everybody, we have to have a culture, church culture, that's inviting for anybody. Now listen, we will never water down the gospel of Jesus here, ever. We'll never water down what Jesus did for us and sin. But we have to have an environment where we welcome people in to hear it. And that's why we work so hard around here to create environments where you can invite people into. It's why we make our buildings not look so churchy and to look inviting. It's why we have greeters everywhere just welcoming people in. It's why our kids and student ministries are just fun and safe and awesome so people can drop off their kids. It's why we try to treat guests as VIPs and just tell them, you're welcome here. It's why our music, we try to make as good as any concert you'd hear anywhere. It's why our messages, we try to make them relevant to life. Why do we do all that? And I could go on and on and on. Because we know every single weekend there's people just like that younger brother walking into our CCV environments, and they're just not sure how they're going to be received. The hands a little sweaty, maybe heart's beating a little bit fast. And some of you have been recently invited to church. Maybe this is your first weekend right now, and you weren't sure how you were going to be received. You've been around some older brothers a lot in life. You've maybe been to some older brother churches. I grew up in an older brother church. I didn't know it at the time. I thought we had an amazing church, but I'll never forget when I invited my best friend Kevin to church with me and what he experienced. You see, Kevin didn't know. He he dressed down while everyone else was dressed up. And it was a small town, so a lot of people knew Kevin, and he got some glances when he walked in. Not very welcome. The music was pretty bad. The message was worse. And I just never forget that I could never get Kevin to come back with me to experience Jesus at that church. He just felt so unwelcomed. I want you to compare that story to a story I recently heard of a couple. It's Joshua and Kelly's story. And just listen to this.
So it was like mid-October, we moved into our first house. Very excited, U-Haul and everything. All of our family and friends were here helping us unload.
And since we live so close to CCV, of course we saw all the stickers around because it is, you know, since there's so many people that live close to the church, when we'd leave the house Saturday night to go do whatever, there was always lots of traffic. So we're like, what's going on? Special event all the time. Traffic's bogged down, it's hard to get out of the neighborhood.
It definitely became an inside joke. We would make a big deal about what time we had to leave because there was special events always going on Saturday and Sundays. At work, there was a young lady named Jody, and she was always smiling and happy and just loved life, and I just couldn't wait to figure out what she was taking, what was she doing. I want to do what you're doing so I can be just as happy as you. She's always was reading her Bible on her breaks, and as I got to know her and ask her questions, I would just find out that really she was really involved in her church. She went to CCV. And she was quick to invite me and my husband to check it out. Just come, I'm going on Sunday, you can meet me there, we can get coffee. Quickly, I picked up my phone, was Googling CCV, what's it about, can we bring my son? So our first visit to CCV was great. From the first minute we pulled in, there was two people standing there with red shirts, welcome masks, waving.
Especially the very first hand wave, you know, you can even hear them say, hello, good morning, and we got the radio on and the windows are closed.
Then we dropped off our son, and the volunteers were wonderful. They were calming and smiling and excited for us to be there.
I'm a musician myself, so I really enjoy worship service, and that was perfect, just hearing the band. And you know, it's contemporary, it's upbeat, so it draws you in. It's easy to listen to, easy to sing along with.
There was something missing for me. There was that deep relationship with God that was missing. I mentioned it at one of our Monday night neighborhood groups that I was thinking of being baptized, and just keep me on the prayer list and, you know, hope that God leads me that way. To my surprise, I show up to be baptized. It's raining and all of my neighbors were there. It was awesome, and it was life-changing. It was wonderful. It's crazy to look at all the different ways that we were led to CCV. First being the location of our house. It's 2 minutes from CCV. At first, we thought that was a nuisance. It was God-driven, for sure. To my coworker, Jody, inviting us to CCV, and really, that's what led us to go. What a difference 1 hour a week changed in our lives.
Isn't that amazing? Great, isn't it? Yeah. You know, I love what Kelly said. She said, I just knew something was missing. And we just want CCV to be a place where people that feel something missing can come and find it. You know, one of the greatest compliments I've heard probably in the past year came from someone we just hired on our staff recently. He's actually going to be our campus pastor in Avondale. His name is Bobby Reed. His wife is named Liz. And we flew them out about a year ago, and Liz had never been to CCV before. And she attended one of our services, and she walked out, and she told her husband, Bobby, she said, we need to take this job. This is where we need to be, because this is a church that I can invite my friends to. That's what our win is. And I just want to let you know, our commitment as a church is we always are going to work our hardest to make CCV a place where you feel comfortable that you can invite anybody here and be proud of your church. Because Jesus was consumed with people that are far from God. And CCV, we always need to be consumed and just driven by people that aren't a part of CCV yet. But what about you? When you hear the story of the prodigal son, do you relate more with the loving father or the older brother? And if I was just being really honest today with you, as I've been putting this message together, I felt so convicted because there's so many times that I relate with that older brother. I do. I just don't have the urgency I need for those around me that might be far from God. I mean, it's kind of like, let's say my wife, Jamie, like ran up to me, and our youngest daughter named Avery, she goes, we lost Avery. We lost her. You got to help me find her right now. And I looked at Jamie and I go, relax. We have two other ones. I mean, what's the big deal? I think that's how I often act towards people around me. I want to tell you why all of us have to start developing more and more of a heart of how a loving father would treat his own son. And here's why. I want to ask you right now, just across all of our campuses, just raise your hand if this church has really changed your life in some way. Raise your hand. Look around. Yeah. Now I want you to raise your hand if you're here because someone invited you to come to CCV. Yeah. That's what we know. Actually, I'll show you the stats on it, because when people are new to CCV, we oftentimes ask them, hey, tell us how you started coming to CCV. And I asked our tech team this last week to give me some responses. This is over 10,000 responses. Here's the results. Okay, check this out. There's another category of just a laundry list of items that they listed, which is about 10%. This one, either a news ad or they got a mailing at home, is about 2%. The CCV sticker is about 2%, okay, CCV sticker. Online, about 7%. Just a drive-by. I was surprised by that. That's why it makes sense for our buildings to just be visible and people drive by and check it out. But look at this. Invited by a friend or family member, over 70% of people that say they come to CCV is because they were invited. You know, so many of us, we kind of get this mixed up a little bit. We think, well, I don't need to really invite people, because if I just live my life differently, then eventually they'll kind of come and ask me about what's going on. And we do need to live differently, don't get me wrong. But we have to invite, because Jesus gave us the Great Commission. He sent us out. And sometimes I think we take the Great Commission and we make it the Great Suggestion. And as we've been talking these last few weeks, the first 3 weeks we said love prays, love accepts others, love invests. But I'm telling you, ultimately, love invites. You know, and I think it's so easy for us to get so consumed with losing trivial things in life. We get consumed over losing our keys or a cell phone or other things. But what about people? What about people? Could you imagine if we were a church where every single one of us treated anybody around us that was far from God the exact same way a loving father would treat his own son? We would change this valley overnight. And so my question to you is very simple. It's this. Who's missing next to you right now that you need to reach out to and invite this week? I mean, like literally, who's not sitting next to you right now that you know needs to be, that you know that it just needs to preoccupy more of your time this next week to just reach out and invite? And I want to give you, as we close, just two really practical ways that you might be able to invite someone to CCV, because sometimes we hear comments like, well, I just don't know how, and I'm not sure what to do, and I'm just going to give you two real practical things, okay? The first one is this. We have maybe one of the easiest invites to invite someone to CCV, maybe in the past few years, coming up here in a few weeks, when we have Easter at Cardinal Stadium. I'm telling you, it is going to be an amazing service. You're not going to want to miss. But it's an easy invite for someone to say, hey, my church is going to go to Cardinal Stadium. We're going to have a great service. It's about an hour long. We'd love for you to come with me. The second thing I'd tell you is, this is something my wife and I use a lot. When we're just trying to invite someone to come with us, we'll say something like this. We'll say, hey, we want to invite you to church, and we kind of combine food with the invite. Because I think there's something special that happens when you just get around a table with someone. I think it communicates something to them in a just a real way. And so a lot of times we'll say, hey, we're going to head to church, and it's about an hour long, and we always eat afterwards, and we'd love for you to come and with us to church, and let's grab a bite afterwards. And by the way, that's why we have food offered on almost every single one of our CCV campuses. And so we'll invite someone, and we'll get to have a meal afterwards, and it just ends up being a really great time for us. And a lot of times when we're inviting someone, we'll say kind of these things about CCV, because if you've never been to CCV before, it's kind of hard to picture and imagine. And we'll say something like, you know, it's about an hour-long service. The kids' programs are really great. You come dressed as you are, and we're telling you the message and music is just really, really relevant. It's really relevant to your life. But what about you? I want to dare all of you and challenge you this week to just go out and be more preoccupied with those around you that might be far from God. Because if we do that as a church, I'm telling you, there are so many people out there that they know they're missing something in life. And we have a message, the message of Jesus, that absolutely transforms people. Jesus was consumed with people far from God. Why not us? Let's pray. Father, it's a message like this when we just unpack really your true meaning behind the story of the prodigal son and the lost sheep and the lost coin, that we just realize your heart, God, that your mission and why you came was to seek and save the lost. And God, we know there's many people around all of us that just need more of our love. They need more of us, our prayers. They need more of our acceptance. They need more of our investment. But God, ultimately, they need us to find ways and opportunities to be bold and just invite them. Because we know that this place, God, doesn't need to just be bigger to be bigger, God. We know this place, we only want to invite people because they can experience Jesus here. And Jesus is the one who changes people. So may all of us take this challenge to heart and just be a lot more like a loving father, how they would treat their own son. In Jesus' name, amen.